98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Cardinals GM Steve Keim.
Keim time.
With Burns and Gambo, presented by Santan Ford and Gilbert. We are Santan Ford.
Welcome back to Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. And as we do every single Friday at 3 o'clock, it's our chance to talk Cardinals football with the general manager of the 6-0 Arizona Cardinals, Steve Keim. He joins us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Steve, good afternoon. Thanks for coming on today. We appreciate it.
Thanks, gentlemen. Great to be on.
Well, first off, let's get an update on how you feel. And we a little bit of an outbreak with the team with COVID. You came down with it. Obviously, we got that news last week. So just want to check. How are you feeling?
I feel great. Yeah, I feel feel really good. Knocked me down for a few days. And basically, from what I understand, you know, being vaccinated certainly helps in that situation. But really feel good right now. And got through the tough parts of it, and just getting ready to try to hopefully clear protocols in the next few days, and feel like I'm pretty close.
Yeah, can't keep those Pennsylvania offensive linemen down for long, can you?
No, man. Shoot, it. You know, all that those good casseroles and stuff growing up certainly buffered some of it, I think.
So just as a matter of a clarification, since you just said it, you technically, officially have not cleared protocols yet. You're still waiting for that kind of final seal of approval before you're all the way back?
Correct, yeah. And again, I think we're, you know, in the home stretch right now, and just waiting, and I would say the next 24 to 48 hours.
It wasn't just you, obviously. It was Cliff Kingsbury, and it was Cam Turner, and it was a couple of the players. Saw Chandler Jones is back today. From afar, since you were from afar like a lot of the guys were, what was your feeling on how your team performed with all of that kind of added burden going into last weekend?
Well, you know, again, really proud of the group, and not only the players, but the coaching staff as well. I thought they had a great plan and certainly executed it well. But, you know, again, the leadership that we have on this team is second to none. And, you know, it starts with guys like JJ and Hop and Kyler and A.J. Green, obviously Rodney Hudson, who has not played or did not play last week. But guys like that, you know, when you have players with that mentality in your locker room, just that confidence sort of permeates throughout the building. And again, you know, being 6-0 and having the success we've had so far in the season says a lot about those guys and our coaching staff as well.
Was it a mad scramble to figure out how you were going to replace, you know, some coaches on the staff for that game last week against Cleveland, or are those plans put in place beforehand?
Yeah, I think that's something that every head coach has to think through, and every organization, really. You know, it's no different from having a ready list with players. You know, if you have a coach that goes down or has, you know, some issues, particularly with the COVID situation right now, you have to have a plan in place. And obviously, Vance Joseph, Jeff Rogers, our assistant head coach, Sean Kugler, and obviously Spencer Whipple did a great job. Those guys were well prepared. And, you know, again, you know, the fact that Vance has been a head coach before, Jeff Rogers has a wealth of experience. Sean Kugler, in my opinion, is one of the best in the league. And again, you know, Spencer Whipple is a young guy that had gotten an opportunity, but certainly made the most of it. And he is a guy that, again, really proud of him. I've known his dad for a long time. You know, his dad was a longtime coach. In fact, when I signed Marcel Shipp as a free agent, that's when I first met his dad at the University of Massachusetts.
Wow, that's crazy. Given how it impacted you, how much were you able to be involved when it all kind of came down like that on Friday afternoon in terms of the delineation of responsibilities and who was going to do what? Were you involved with that at all, or could you be?
Yeah, of course. You know, having conversations with Michael Bidwell and Cliff and the coaching staff, you know, the one thing that's maybe a positive about COVID, if there's anything that you can think of, is our ability to, you know, do things virtually. And that's the one positive, is we've learned a lot about the virtual world, that we've been able to conduct business and business as usual, whether it's with meetings and different things like that, to feel like you're still right there, sort of in the fray of things. But, you know, we have a lot of good people in this organization, a lot of truly talented people that you can lean on when situations like this arise. So, again, very proud of the organization and the way we've handled it.
Well, we missed you last Friday. Obviously, we were going to talk at that time about the big trade that you pulled in getting Zach Ertz in a trade with the Philadelphia Eagles. So we'll talk about that now. I mean, you had Max Williams, a big part of this team, go down with the season-ending injury. Take us through that, the steps in the process of you signed a guy from to the practice squad, and then you make the trade for Ertz. Take us through your thought process on making that deal.
Yeah, and really unfortunate for Max. I know we all have love what he brings to the table in terms of his leadership and the kind of guy he is in the locker room. You know, our players, when he got hurt, it says a lot about who he is, the way they responded. But, you know, we felt like we had to make a move, and to have the opportunity to acquire a guy like Zach Ertz, and, you know, what he's done in this league is, to me, a great opportunity for us. And, you know, talking to Howie Roseman and, you know, and then talking it through with Michael Bidwell to have his support, you know, just shows you what, you know, ownership means to us and how supportive he was in making this move, you know, to being 6-0 and saying, hey, let's go get another piece, let's be aggressive, and let's add a guy that not only, you know, does a lot for us on the field, whether it's, you know, schematically creating mismatches in the passing game, helping us in the run game, but a guy that, you know, really fits in our locker room, you know, sort of follows what we've done with guys like J.J. Hudson and A.J. Green, you know, really good, strong character guys that are also still playing good football.
I had a few players tell me that it's just huge, the message it sends to that locker room. You've got a team that's undefeated. You're trying to win it all. You have a key player go down, and you go out and you get Zach Ertz, you know, one of the better tight ends in the league, and you make the trade, and you give up the assets to get him. Just give me your thoughts on the message that it sent to your players.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the one thing as a general manager that you have to keep in mind is, you know, after the team is built and after the 53 is put together in late August and early September, you know, you don't have a lot of chances other than, you know, small decisions to affect the team because it's put in place for the most part. But here's an opportunity that arises from time to time, especially the situation we were in at 6-0 with a very talented team that I think has a chance to do special things this year. And it was a chance to instill confidence in the locker room that, you know, the people upstairs and the personnel department, the coaching staff and ownership are willing to do things to help the team and just instills, again, that confidence in that group that as an organization we're willing to do whatever it takes to put a championship team on the field. And hopefully that is a sign for our fans as well, because we're awfully proud of the things we've accomplished so far. Know there's a lot of football to be played, and that's a strong reason that we made that decision.
Steve Keim, general manager of the Cardinals, our guest here, as he is every Friday at 3 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo Show, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. An unusual, at least it seemed unusual, set of circumstances, Zach taking the field on that Thursday night game, knowing that that was his last game. Was that kind of a hold-your-breath kind of 3 hours, knowing what might have been on the line for you and him and them and everybody going into that game?
Yeah, you know, and I think it was a very similar situation when we traded for Marcus Golden. I think he played on a Thursday night right before, you know, we traded for him as well. I remember calling him on a Friday, I believe it was, to tell him, you know, we had traded for him, and he was asleep. So it was hard to get a hold of him because he was so tired from the game the night before. But, you know, those situations are tough. You know, when you play on a Thursday night, it puts the trading team in a tough position. But, you know, really excited that we were able to acquire him, just like Marcus. You know, guys that we think can come in and contribute right away. And there's no doubt, you know, during that game, and especially when he scored a touchdown, I was awfully excited, not only for him, especially to go out that way, because I know Philly is a special place to Zach, but for their fans as well, to be able to, you know, sort of celebrate with him, you know, as one.
Trade deadline's coming up in a couple of weeks. You already pulled off the one big deal. Cornerback, defensive line, do you see yourself continuing to be aggressive and adding to this roster?
Yeah, I think we'd be foolish not to at least entertain any opportunity that comes up. So we'll continue to work the phones, and if there is an opportunity, Gambo, that presents itself, you know, we'll certainly be interested. Anything we can do to improve this roster, I think that we'd, again, be foolish not to address it.
You go into this game against the Houston Texans. From your perspective, how much do you think this one means to Hop? How much do you think this one means to JJ?
Well, you know, I think it would be easy to say this is just any other game, but, you know, that would not be accurate in my opinion, and I certainly don't want to say something that isn't the truth. I mean, obviously, Houston is a special place to both those guys. So I don't think there's a lot of animosity, yet at the same time, anytime you're playing the team that drafted you and that you had a lot of success for, especially individually, both those guys were great players there. And I know the fans still love them. I know that, again, both those guys, as much as I know they'd like to beat the Texans, Houston is a very special place in both their hearts.
Hey, we're glad you're feeling better. Hope you can get out there to the game on Sunday. And glad that the team's starting to break away from this COVID outbreak.
Thanks, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, Steve Keim joining us here on the Burns and Gambo Show, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. When we come back, we're not even entirely sure what the allegations are that are being attributed to Robert Sarver, but the Suns organization is already denying any sort of wrongdoing. We'll get you caught up on the very latest with this still very fluid story next on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, again, our thanks to Steve Keim for joining us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Good to hear that he is on the mend. Could be 24 to 48 hours from clearing all the final protocols and getting back with the Arizona Cardinals. The Suns, that has become story numero uno today in light of a tweet that was sent out, and the author of that tweet will be joining us a little later on in the show. Jordan Schultz, formerly of Yahoo Sports, now he hosts a podcast with CJ McCollum, sent out a tweet about an hour and a half ago in which he says the NBA is bracing themselves for a massive story that's going to come out, accusing Suns owner Robert Sarver of racism, sexism, and sexual harassment throughout a series of incidents. He then writes in his tweet, quote, "With enough evidence to support such claims, there's a real chance the league would forcibly remove Sarver," close quote. In other words, Donald Sterling 2.0, potentially.
Sure. I mean, you wonder what unless you know the information, like, or you're just basically assuming that all that information is true, and that if it is true, then the league could step in and, you know, forcibly remove him from that point. Now, we'll have Jordan Schultz on at 5:30 and see what he knows about this story. But what I've been able to garner is that this story's been in the works for many, many, many months. There's been a lot of people interviewed, as many as 50, and that we should, and that the person doing this story, and I mentioned it, came here, Baxter, what did I say his name was? Baxter...
I can't remember. I can't remember now.
Okay, I mentioned who the person doing this. Baxter Holmes of ESPN involved with the story. We'll see if it's him, but that's who I told was asking around and trying to get details for this story.
Okay, so the Suns, knowing that in many ways the tone has already been set. I mean, as soon as you release a tweet in which you say racism, sexism, sexual harassment, right, people... unfortunately, rush to just assume that that's the truth. And I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying it isn't. I'm just saying human nature, you read that and you think that's just how it is. The Phoenix Suns are trying to get back ahead of this. They released a lengthy statement today. Lengthy statement from Robert Sarver. Lengthy statement from Jason Rowley, the president and CEO of the Suns.
Short comment from James Jones, the general manager.
Very short comment from James Jones. I'll read his verbatim, quote, "None of what's been said describes the Robert Sarver I know, respect, and like. It just doesn't." Highlights from what Robert said in the statement. "I am wholly shocked. I can't begin to know how to respond to some of the vague suggestions made by mostly anonymous voices. Claims I find completely repugnant to my nature. I can tell you they never, ever happened." And then I'll read this in its totality. "I don't begin to know how to prove that something didn't happen. It's difficult to erase or forget ugly accusations once they are made. Even hints of racism or sexism in our culture today are toxic and damaging and should not be lightly raised. I categorically deny any and all suggestions I use disparaging language related to race or gender."
Yeah. Look, there's a lot of people who don't like Robert Sarver. He's got enemies. There's no doubt about it. I don't know him as well as people think I do, but what I do know of him, that is not the person that they're describing right there. Now, we'll hear from other people. You just heard from Jason Rowley and James Jones. You have a statement from the Suns, and I'm sure we'll see what's in this story, what details in this story, and what other people say. Now, I'm not there. I don't work there. I'm not there on a regular basis. What I do know of the guy and the time that I've known him since he took over the team, I've never seen that. I've always seen a good working environment for the people that were there. But again, I'll wait to see what the story details. The only thing I can tell you is my experiences with him, and speak to people that have worked in that organization and worked for him and just kind of dig. Did anything ever happen? Did anything like that ever happen? I remember when that ESPN story came out and it was just a rip job on Sovereign. I'm looking at a message I sent to Grant Hill. And I said, Grant, it's Gambo. And, you know, I just, did this ever happen? He goes, Gambo, that didn't happen at all. He never dressed me down. He's always good to me. What you've heard about him is true. So stuff like that. So I reached out to Grant Hill at that time. And I said, Grant, like, you know, this story, they're saying that Sarver dressed you down. Is that true? Just tell me yes or no. And Grant said, Gambo, that never happened. He never dressed me down. So, yeah. You know, the time is to let the story come out, see who's quoted in the story, and then talk to those people or people that know those people and kind of see if there's an agenda there or if there's truth to it.
Yeah, I would imagine from the NBA standpoint what the next step will be, as Jordan, you know, intimated in his tweet. The NBA is bracing for this report. They're preparing themselves for this report. No doubt, depending on what is reported, they're going to have to investigate what's in the report,
sure.
Right? They're going to have to do their own 100%. Investigation. But as we've seen in the Donald Sterling situation, this is a league that has no fear of removing an owner if it feels like it has to, you know, and I'm not saying it's going to come to that, because I, like you, haven't seen the story. I don't know what's in it, but I would expect that whatever's in that story, the league will do its own investigation. They will conduct a follow-up, perhaps interview the same people that were interviewed in the story. And if there's enough there that they don't like, especially in, you know, as Robert himself says in his statement, you know, in today's culture, in today's society, even the hint of racism, even the suggestion of sexist comments is toxic in a workplace. I can't imagine that the league, we've seen the league in the past not hesitate in removing an owner that they feel like is responsible for a toxic culture. Whether that's what they're going to find here or not, A, we need to see the report, and B, we need to find out what the NBA is going to do about the report. But it has in the past shown a willingness to remove owners.
Listen, were their complaints filed or their reports? Or is this just, you know, what is going on? You know, what is going on here? Why now? Why this story now? Why if this story was months and months ago, why is it coming out now? Why didn't it come out earlier if they've been working on this for almost a year? Maybe they just needed to speak to more people. I don't know. How do you defend something that didn't happen? Look, I get that. I mean, they're trying to, if what Robert Sarver is saying and the Suns organization is saying, it is difficult to defend yourself against something that never happened.
It is difficult to put that toothpaste back in the tube. Once you use those words, once you say those things, man, perception is set. And it's hard to put that tooth. And that's what I think Robert is saying. It's hard to put that toothpaste back in that tube. You know, it's out there.
Well, I think you look at it. Certain people were interviewed, right? If this person's saying, hey, Robert Sarver used this word. Okay, did you report it? Robert Sarver made advances at me, if you're a woman. Okay, did you report it? I mean, there's got to be, like, that's how you defend yourself, right? I mean, anybody could do he said, she said. I'm not saying that what you're saying is not true, but you would think that if there was enough of those, there would be some reports filed. There would have been some complaints filed and some research done to see if what was being reported was true and if that really happened.
Either way, I'll just tell you this right now. For a team trying to get back to the NBA Finals, this is not going to be good for them. And I know that's a massive understatement. I know that's kind of a statement. But in a time when the focus should be on basketball and winning and getting back to the finals, and now you're talking about this for God only knows how long, that is not the kind of news you want to hear if you're a Suns, if you're in the organization, if you're a fan of the Suns. This is not a good thing, because it takes everybody's eye off the ball. When we come back, all of the experts, quote-unquote, predicting a Cardinals blowout win over the Texans on Sunday. What are the expectations in Houston for this weekend's matchup? We'll find out next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Back here with you on the Burns and Gambo Show, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Cardinals and the Houston Texans coming up Sunday afternoon, 1:25 local time here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. And joining us right now on the 72-sold sports line, a real good follow on social media, not only for news and information about the Houston Texans, but the NFL in general, as he covers the Texans and the NFL for Sports Talk 790 in Houston. Joining us right now, Aaron Wilson, here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Aaron, I'm Dave. This is Gambo. Welcome to the show. Thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right. Worst trade ever in Houston history, the DeAndre Hopkins trade, is it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's so one-sided and short-sighted and, you know, just really didn't factor in value very well. And a lot of it had to do with a bad relationship between Bill O'Brien and DeAndre Hopkins. And that was the impetus for the primary impetus for the trade. And him wanting a raise, well, he was under contract and he wasn't, you know, if he held out, he would have eventually shown up, I believe. And you work until you get a better trade. Okay. And then obviously, you know, and I talked to David Johnson on Tuesday and, you know, David didn't ask to be the answer to that trivia question. They did get also Ross Blacklock in the draft, but Ross is active and David is the third down back and coming off of a very poor game. He said it's going to feel weird for him to come back to Arizona, but he's still planning to have some friends and family attend the game and, you know, has good memories of his time with the Cardinals. But, man, this created a lot of stress for David because it's like, you know, when you're on the other end of that, he didn't ask to be involved in this trade. So, you know, it's against his will. He didn't have a no-trade clause. And if you're DeAndre Hopkins, you couldn't be happier, even though you had to be uprooted. You didn't want to leave Houston. And I think it led to a chain reaction of eventually Deshaun Watson's trade request and his discontent with the organization and, you know, that unresolved status.
Yeah.
Even before, you know, his legal problems came to light. But, yeah, I would say that it's just a bad, bad trade. And obviously, you know, DeAndre has 6 touchdowns and played exemplary football last year and continues to thrive with a better quarterbacking situation.
So from a Houston perspective, I mean, obviously everything that can go wrong has gone wrong for this team this year. Is this sort of the peak of that dread, if you will, for the Houston Texans having to face Hopkins, having to face J.J. Watt? You're dialed in with that fan base. You're dialed within that organization. Is this a week? You talk about teams circling, you know, teams on the calendar. Is this one that they've been dreading for a couple of weeks because of all of this?
I think for the fans, yes. But for the organization, which is thoroughly dove into a rebuild and embraced the fact that, you know, they're trying to plan ahead for the future, not as much, you know, really concerned with right now, how is the record? Are you able to win these football games? It's about more than that. As Nick Caserio said, they're going to be process-oriented just as much as outcome. What does that mean? Well, it means it's a fancy way of saying we're planning ahead for the future.
Yeah.
You're rebuilding. Yeah. So, yes, for fans, it's upsetting, of course, to see Watt and Hopkins, two beloved franchise players in another uniform, and that they're going to try to beat the brains out of you. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to accept.
Aaron, we've gone through it here. We've gone through the Suns losing on purpose to get draft picks like Josh Jackson and Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris and eventually DeAndre Ayton. We're going through it with the Coyotes right now. They're trying to lose. Now, the players, they don't go out there to try to lose on purpose, but you know how this works. I mean, an organization can basically set up a team to make sure they lose. Do you believe that the Houston Texans are trying to lose games right now?
I didn't say that. I think that you try to be as competitive as you can, and then when you aren't winning, you do have to think about development and balance as a balancing act between trying to win and being realistic about, does it make more sense to have a Whitney Mercilus on the roster or a younger player that we might have a plan for? Like, he was going to be a free agent, so you cut him even though he had 3 sacks. You can't say that you made your team better. So, yes, in a sense, yes, but in also a sense, no. You never try to lose. And I don't think they're trying to lose. I think you accept your circumstances.
Yeah.
And in some cases, you try to do stuff like This is a smaller move they made this week. They cherry-picked Jimmy Morrissey off the Las Vegas Raiders practice squad. It wasn't just because of Justin Britt's knee, but it was partially because of that. But it's also because they're thinking, well, let's get a young developmental player and think ahead. Maybe he's a keeper. That's what they're looking for. It's about building blocks for the future. But, yeah, I mean, they're not going to, you know, I mean, tanking is a, that's a tough accusation.
Yeah.
There's, and I don't want to, you know, say that anyone's trying to tank. You know, if you play Jeff Driskel, yes, you're obviously not trying to win the game. If you play Davis Mills, when Tyrod Taylor is not even healthy enough to play, that's when I think the real question comes up, when Taylor is genuinely healthy. He's not. He's still under reserve. He's not ready to go.
Yeah.
But if they still keep Taylor on the bench when he's actually healthy and the hamstring is fine, and you're playing Davis Mills, and he's losing start after start after start, he's lost now five games in a row. I mean, I think then the handwriting's kind of on the wall, but I'm pretty literal about it, you know, trying to lose, that kind of thing.
Aaron Wilson from the Sports Talk 790 in Houston joining us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Leave us with this, because we were following your reporting on this a couple of days ago. Deshaun Watson, for a minute there, it felt like maybe something was going to happen this week, and now, you know, the week is pretty much over. Your expectation that something will happen with him before the trade deadline, are you fairly confident something will at this point?
No, not today. No, a lot of the feedback I'm getting today is nowhere near as confident as it was days ago, where there was some optimism. It sounds like one thing that's going on with this is a real sense that he wouldn't be allowed to play, and that causes some consternation on the part of the Miami Dolphins,
yeah,
the primary suitor, really the only suitor left. So if you're trading a bunch of draft capital for him and then you can't even put him on the field, and his legal issues, and I can tell you this, the district attorney here in Houston does not care about the NFL or its trade deadline or anything like that. So I do not anticipate a situation where they're going to all of a sudden have resolution. And because you don't know if he's going to be indicted or not, that's a worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Indicted, commissioner's exempt, a trial late next year, missing the 2022 season, if not all of it, the bulk of it, then possibly punished in 2023. Very real possibility.
Yeah.
Aaron, the Miami Dolphins, I just don't think the trade makes sense unless they're giving him away, which they're not.
Aaron, we appreciate the time. Thank you for coming on for a few. Safe travels if you're headed out here this weekend. We'll catch up with you soon, okay?
See you guys on Sunday.
Sounds good. Thank you. Aaron Wilson joining us from Sports Talk 790 in Houston. He joins us on the 72 Sold Sports Line. Get your price at 72sold.com. You can get lower-level tickets for just $19.87 to see ASU football host Washington State on Saturday, October 30th. Text the word DEVILS to 620-620. We'll send you a link to purchase tickets. Again, text the word DEVILS to 620-620. It's the Arizona Sports Sun Devil Special. Speaking of that, ASU football no longer controls their own destiny when it comes to winning the Pac-12 South. But there is one thing that is in the favor of the Sun Devils when it comes to winning the division. And we'll tell you what that is next on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, so knowing full well what our top stories of the day are today, all right, it's this Robert Sarver situation. Jordan Schultz is going to join us a little later on in the show. Story coming out apparently sometime next week, detailing through several interviews with former employees of the organization as what sounds like a very poor workplace culture that the Suns almost instantaneously denied in a lengthy statement they released. So that's one of the top stories of the day today, of course. The Cardinals getting ready to take on the Texans, another one of our top stories today. But I also think we need to, and even though they're not playing this weekend, I think we do need to spend a few minutes talking about ASU, Gambo, because okay. I, as disappointing as that loss was to Utah, let's not confuse the issue here. There is still a very viable path for ASU to get to the Pac-12 championship game and potentially the Rose Bowl. It was a setback, to be sure, but there is a path for them to get there.
Well, the path is real simple, right? They've got to win out, and Utah has to lose two games. Okay. Can they win out? Yeah, they'll be favored to win just about all the games they're going to play. I mean, you've been worried about that game in Corvallis against Oregon State. You do got to play Washington and Seattle. You know, Washington's not good, but you know, you got Arizona. They do have to play USC, but USC's not very good. But still, you know, do I think Arizona State will win all of their games? Probably not, but they will. They might lose one, but just say they win out. Because that's what they need to do, win out. Then they need Utah to lose two games. So Utah's got to lose two games. Their schedule strength is harder. It's more difficult for Utah than it is for Arizona State. They'll be favored against Stanford. They've got games against Arizona and Colorado. They'll be heavy favorites against that, against those teams. But I think Utah's schedule, when you look at it, I mean, they've got to play Oregon State. They've got to play UCLA. That schedule may be a little bit tougher. You might be able to look at that schedule for Utah and say, okay, I could see two losses there. Now, if they lose three, then ASU can afford to lose a game.
Yeah.
But if they lose two, you've got to win out.
I'm looking at their schedule right now, and the three that kind of pop off the page to me is one of them is this weekend. They're at Oregon State. That's a really interesting game in the Pac-12, and certainly if you're an ASU fan, one to keep an eye on, because that could be a team that could hang a loss potentially on Utah. The other is the next week, as you mentioned, against UCLA. That game is in Utah, though, so I think they have an advantage there. And then the third is also at home, and that's against 10th-ranked Oregon. So you ask yourself, at Oregon State, home against UCLA, home against Oregon, can you coax two more losses out of Utah out of those three games? Because if you can, and the ASU can win out, and I admit that's going to be a tough task for ASU to win out, but that's where you start to see your path. Is it likely? No. But it's also not done. It's not over. It's not finished. There's still a way for this to happen. And I'm telling you, I think it starts this weekend, because I think this Utah-Oregon State game is a big game for ASU fans to keep an eye on.
Sure.
Big.
Because if they lose to Oregon State, that's the one loss that kind of gets you back even. But now, now you're even, but they got the tiebreaker. So now you need them to lose again. Look, it's very simple. Utah's got to lose two games, and ASU can't lose any. If Utah, only loses one, it doesn't matter what ASU does. They're going to be your champion. UCLA, they've got Oregon next. So if UCLA loses to Oregon, I think for all intent and purposes, that puts them at, 3-3 in a conference? They're done. They're on the wrong side of tiebreakers with the Sun Devils and with Utah. So if UCLA ends up losing that game, then they're basically done. And then it's a two-team race between ASU and Utah.
Yeah, if you're ranking it by strength of schedule from here on out, Utah's got the toughest, UCLA the second toughest, ASU has the easiest of the three Pac-12 South contenders. Something, we've got a couple minutes here, and you were really intrigued by it yesterday.
Yes, so it was.
I want to circle back to this for a couple minutes. George Kliavkov, the commissioner of the Pac-12, suggested yesterday on a radio interview that perhaps in the future, the Pac-12 title game wouldn't be the South champ versus the North champ. It would be the teams with the two best records, regardless of what division they came from. Clearly, trying to bolster the resume, right, of a team trying to get in, I would think, to a national championship Final Four. I would think that would have something to do with it.
It's going to be a lot easier for the number one team in a conference to beat the number two team in the conference than possibly the three or four team in the conference. You know, based on you look at that, okay, what does the Pac-12 championship game mean? Well, if Oregon's undefeated and they're playing a South team that's not as good as, say, a Stanford, then I think that could hurt them a little bit, that their Pac-12 championship game's not that great of a game.
Yeah.
Look, you always want the best matchups. In the SEC, you end up with Alabama and Georgia. You'll be like, well, okay, that's a great game. So you always want the best matchups. I mean, Ohio State should match up with an unbeaten team, as well. I think that's pretty good. So I understand it. I'm all for it. Put the two best teams against each other. The whole Pac-12 North and South thing, I've never really been on board with it that much anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They won the Pac-12. Todd Graham won the Pac-12 South, and they got slaughtered by Stanford. I mean, I don't care about North and South. Just I care about winning the Pac-12.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of this damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing. Because on one respect, let's use Oregon as an example. Okay. You've got Oregon. In one respect, you'd like them to have an easy path in the Pac-12 title game, so it ensures that they're going to win and they have a better win-loss record. But then on the other hand, while all of these other conferences have teams that are bolstering their resumes with a quality win at the end, if you get a garbage win against a garbage Pac-12 South team, instead of really bolstering your argument by beating, say, a one-loss Oregon State team, you know, or you mentioned Stanford a second ago, that's the kind of win that can really, oh, wow, they beat somebody of significance in their conference championship game. We've got to give – are you increasing the odds you could lose that game? Yeah, of course, you are. But you're also giving yourself a better chance to bolster your resume if you beat somebody decent in that game.
I think if you go back and look at it, you'll see plenty of examples where, you know, and sometimes where I'm looking at 2019. Oregon was 8-1. The next best team in the Pac-12 North was Oregon State. So that really wasn't a factor. So, but I think there will be some years where you'll see that happen. So back in 2019, the two best teams were Oregon was 8-1. And Utah was 8-1, one team from the north and one team from the south. But there are examples over the years where the two best teams were, you know, likely in one conference.
Tonight, there is Pac-12 action on the docket. Arizona is hosting Washington this evening. 18-game losing streak they take into that game tonight. They will be going with Will Plummer as their starting quarterback. Remember, he was the second stringer, then became the starter, yeah. Then he was dropped to third string. He started the year as the number two guy behind Gunnar Cruz. He was elevated to the top spot, dropped to number three. Then Jordan McLeod had that season-ending injury. You look at that schedule and you look at that team and you wonder if they're going to get even one.
You
this
are
year.
Coming off of rock bottom. Rock bottom. They were shut out for that 18th straight defeat. They lost to Colorado and were shut out. That was the first shutout loss since 2012 when they lost 49-0 to Oregon. Now, it was a 6-0 game in the third quarter, but all of a sudden, you know, a punt gets blocked, returned for a touchdown, and then a pick six, and it's 20-0 Colorado, and then Colorado just goes on to crush them. I mean, that was tough. I mean, their defense gave up 11 plays of at least 10 yards. So they really struggled. Now, you know, Gunnar Cruz out for the season, right? And you'll deal with that. But man, this is a bad, bad football team.
Yep.
And Fish is, you know, he's just gonna have to deal with it. I mean, you just got to get to the end of the season and try to get more of your players in. But they get shut out by Colorado. That's rock bottom.
Washington tonight, at USC next weekend, home against Cal, home against Utah, at Washington State, and then at ASU. That's the remaining schedule for Arizona. Is there one win in there? And most intriguingly, do they go into that finale against ASU 0-11, needing one win to avoid a winless season? Does it all come down to the ASU game at the end of the season? That would be...
To get that one win?
To get that one win.
Listen, they can't beat ASU.
I don't think they can either.
They can't beat ASU.
But that'll be the carrot at the end of the hook. Right?
ASU could have 25 penalties in the game, and U of A can't beat them.
It appears the Phoenix Suns and Robert Sarver are going to be featured somehow, some way, in a new report about some alleged inappropriate behavior and comments from the owner. The organization has already responded, even though the story's not even out yet. We'll tell you what they had to say next on the Burns and Gambo Show.